internalization of childhood messages when it collides with the natural, spontaneous, instinctually grounded self. This collision's inevitable, though often remaining unconscious, until it presents itself to consciousness as troubling symptoms. Now, when we think about the false self, what is false about it? It's not that we're being hypocritical or lying to ourselves. Each of us is a prisoner to some degree of history. We look at the world through certain prisms, the prisms of the family of origin and its psychology and dynamics and its powerful messages. We are subject to our biological ancestry. We are at the mercy of whatever the socioeconomic and educational, religious, and other cultural forces are in our environment at any given moment. And we begin to see the world through those prisms. Stop and think that if you had been born to, let's say, a medieval Thailand family of different religion and different set of values, you would have a whole different sense of self. And at the same time, who you were, your natural being, would be a constant. And so often in the collision between the internalized messages that one receives from one's environment and the encounter with the natural self, this collision produces symptomatology. The good news is that we do have symptomatology. In the Western world, we tend to want to rid ourselves of symptomatology as quickly as possible. We go to a doctor and ask for a pill, or we solicit some form of theological solution or some form of positive thinking, but many times these things don't really touch the issue. The presence of symptomatology, paradoxically, is a reminder of the dynamism of the psyche. It represents the autonomy of the psyche. We can't wish it away, will it away. It shows up, it speaks. One of the things I've learned as a therapist as well as a human being is that the psyche is never silent. The psyche is forever soliciting our will and our intentionality to help us make choices that will align themselves more completely with the intention of our nature. Freud put it so succinctly when he said, "The price of civilization is neurosis." And what he meant by that was simply the collision between messages, the message of instinct and the message of our culture. Jung once said that neurosis is suffering that has not yet found its meaning. And he said all of our sufferings come from one place, and that is because we've gotten away from our instinctual grounding. Indeed, in the 19th century, Nietzsche called us the sick animal. So I think we recognize there that there is a claim that our society makes upon us, our family of origin, our culture and our education, our socioeconomic conditions, at the same time, a natural instinctual truth that seeks to be served in the world as well. And one thing that we all learn as children is our essential powerlessness. We all get one big message, namely, the world's big and you're not. And therefore, you better learn to adjust and adapt to get your needs met, to stay out of harm's way, and to the best you can, manage anxiety. Now, nothing I'm talking about here is necessarily original or peculiar to our time and place. As a matter of fact, this was perceived many, many years ago in what the Greeks called the tragic vision. The tragedy for them was not something awful happened. They had a word for that, and it was catastrophe. Tragedy was the unfolding of the interaction between fate and choice and the way in which these forces mingled within the conduct of a person's history. So they understood, first of all, that each of us is, in a sense, enmeshed in various force fields. One force field they called fate or mira, and fate represents all of the givens, the determinations, the family of origin, again, our genetics, our culture, etc. And on the other hand, we swim in another force field called proerismus, or we've translated that as destiny. Destiny is that which is capable of becoming. So already we're creatures of fate and limitation, but we're also a being that is seeking somehow to realize itself in the world. And right there in the middle is the individual making choices on a daily basis. And there are three elements that constituted what we would today call the psychology of the individual. The first was something that tended to be inherent, although it could also be developed, and we still have that word, which is character, those properties that we sometimes see in infants and young children, and yet are capable of being shaped and are often malleable, so that we make choices out of our character. But secondly, we tend to see the world through a prism, that is to say, the prism of family of origin, again, and culture. And we make choices, not realizing, as every prism does, it bends the light, and we don't necessarily see the